Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Good morning, Napa Valley. This is Lee W. Miller bringing you all things Napa once again here on October 2nd. So let's say hello to Dustin Deedy and Melissa Deedy. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks, Lee, for having us on the show.
We're excited because most people think that it's all about real estate, but you can also do home inspections for other reasons, probably, right? But it's mostly real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we get a lot of calls from people who just want to know what's going on in their house. So a lot of people think, hey, it's just real estate transactions that is happening. But I would say that a good 12 to 15% of the work that we're doing out there is just people who have no idea what's going on in their houses. They don't want to get in their crawl spaces. That's always the number one thing.
Hey, oh, I know. I've seen some of the pictures you post.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going down there.
Nobody ever wants to get dirty. Not to mention, you know, there's often damp, moist, wet. So, yeah, we're always the ones
not
that they call
spiders
to get dirty.
And snakes. And
yeah. You know, every now and
possibly.
Again, come across something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, we get called out for various different things throughout the valley. So,
well, before we get in more detail there, go ahead and give us a little bit of background on you as your Napa affiliation anyway.
Okay. Well, for me, I was born in Deadwood, South Dakota. So there's a little Napa nugget for you one day.
That's great.
Yeah,
I know you, but I didn't know that. So we'll have to talk about that some more sometime.
Yeah, Deadwood's awesome. So yeah, the whole TV show, movie, and everything, it's part of my history. But anyways, born there, grew up in Arkansas, so way out in the deep south. And then I joined the military and went off to went into the Air Force in 1993 and retired from the Air Force in 2015 in July. So in the Air Force, I was an aircraft mechanic. I specialized in flight controls, electrical, plumbing, hydraulics, all of that stuff. So that's kind of where my background came from. And then after I retired, I went back to school, finished my master's degree. I have a master's degree in organizational development, leadership, and then worked for a couple of companies and decided that I really couldn't stand sitting at a desk. So I took a deep look at owning my own business and what I could do to better serve the community. And this is where it kind of landed. So
yeah, that's great. Melissa, give us a little bit of background on you.
Well, I'm a California native, originally from Southern California, and I joined the military in 2005. So when I got stationed at Travis, I moved to Napa in about 2008. So I came here in 2008. After I separated from the military in 2016, I went to go work for Tesla as their lead mechanic. So working on a lot of the manual equipment and their robotics equipment there. So I have a pretty big maintenance background working on jet engine mechanics in the Air Force. And then, like Dustin said, when we came across Pillar to Post, it was kind of just a perfect fit for us. So we moved here in Napa, and while I was working at Tesla, I went to go finish my master's degree in public administration. So when we do our jobs, we bring in a lot of that background from our education back right into the business. And then
Okay.
Here we are.
She's hardcore.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously hardcore. I mean, a jet engine mechanic, and then she said, I worked for Tesla as a mechanic. She was actually one of their on their robotics line, you know, running the robotics and making sure that it doesn't shut down, you know, countless hours for Tesla. So she's incredible, and I know she doesn't see herself that way, but she is just, she's a machine.
Isn't that the way that it is? We see our spouses in a much bigger and more wonderful picture than they see themselves. And I guess that's probably good, but...
Yeah, I guess so. She's a little modest, but I think everybody would agree that, you know, she's a girl, she's a jet engine mechanic, you know, she's a weapon wielding, you know, machine over there. So I wouldn't mess with her, guys.
All right, you've all been warned. Don't mess with Melissa. So obviously you didn't know from the beginning of, you know, your childhood, what I want to be when I grow up is a home inspector. And before you selected this Pillar to Post as your business, what other businesses did you consider, or did this one kind of bubble to the top early on, requiring you not to even look at any others?
Well, when we got into this business, Melissa was actually still working for Tesla at the time. So I was kind of, you know, it was something I was going to do. You know, we didn't even think we were going to go into it together, aside from her being a faithful supporter of everything that I do. I came home from work one day and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't go sit at a desk. I was in that human resources department, you know, and, you know, there's the challenge of hiring and firing and keeping a machine running in that business. So I was at my wit's end at the time. And I said, you know, we got to find something. And I'm a big believer in fate, and that's closely tied to faith. Right. I like your plug for the church this morning. But it was very quickly revealed to me what we should do, or what I should do. So, I mean, Pillar to Post came to the top, you know, rose up there just like cream. I mean, it was so easy to make the decision. They were extreme veteran supporters. It just, for a veteran-based business, they had kickbacks and incentives, and they just made it easy for us. And then when we really dove into it, the training for Pillar to Post was very, very similar to what we grew up with. I mean, when you're in the military, your whole life is a checklist. I mean, everything you do is, you know, step one all the way through to the end. And if you miss any steps, so be it. You're doing push-ups, you're running, you're doing whatever. So for us, for me, it was very simple. It was just right there. It was so clear. This is it. Follow the checklist, follow their rules. And before you knew it, we were off and running. And I mean, we were running, and it was quick. So, and that's what I liked about it. So it just was there.
Yeah. And the interesting thing to me is that your business seems to be flourishing so well when you're relatively new business, last couple of years, and yet there were already so many other home inspectors in town, and that didn't hamper you at all. I'm assuming that they're all doing pretty well also, and there's room for multiple home inspectors in town. But for being the newcomer, that's quite impressive that you guys are doing as well as you are. And I think that speaks volumes of your professionalism and the quality of work that you do deliver to your clients, whether they be realtors or homeowners that, like you said, just need to know what's going on with their house. So, Melissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about what an average day is like in the occupation of being home inspectors?
Well, you really don't know exactly what you're going to get into. You can kind of imagine that every house is a little bit different, but you really don't know exactly what the condition of the home is going to be in. So when we show up to a job, we kind of remain very open-minded about what we're gonna find. We have to take into consideration many factors, not just the house, but the landscaping, the grading, everything that is affecting the building. We have to take into consideration who our client is, because every client is different. They have different needs, they have different backgrounds. And working with the client, working with the realtor in this situation, and kind of getting a feel for how we're gonna approach the situation and kind of go from there. But we go through everything, starting from the exterior point of view, and then working our way to the interior, and then
top from bottom, you know, looking at everything. We are pretty detailed. I would say we're one of the most detailed companies around for quite some mileage, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because more information is good for the client. It's good for us. It's good for the community. It lets people be aware and know how to take care of their property a little bit better.
Right. And just for our listeners, if you don't know, obviously a whole home inspection is important, especially in a real estate transaction where the buyer wants to know what they're getting into. This is a huge purchase for them, and no home is perfect. I learned that once when a home inspector found things wrong with a brand new home that had just been signed off by the county, and lo and behold, there were things that were wrong with that home, and that was kind of an eye-opener for me. And it protected that buyer, because prior to closing escrow, we could go and say, hey, wait a minute, the dishwasher's not draining properly, you need to fix that, and this socket over here doesn't work. It was minor stuff, but that was just proof that not any home is perfect. And along the same lines, just because your home inspection reveals a litany of things that are wrong with the house doesn't mean that they shouldn't buy it, but now they're, you know, full disclosure, they know what they're getting into. How often have you seen the results of your home inspection, unintentionally, of course, kill the deal, and a buyer says, oh, whoa, that's more than I want to deal with? Or do you even know when that occurs?
Sometimes we do. I've known of a few transactions where it's been canceled, and normally it's because one of the things, when you said what's the difference, what makes you guys so quick to move into the business, we're very customer oriented. When we do a home inspection, we brief on site, we walk the clients through everything, and then days later, after the transaction's all completed, realtors probably don't know this about us, but we call every client, every one of them, after everything's done, and say, hey, how's things going? Is there anything that you have questions about? Is there any concerns? And that's usually when I find out, oh yeah, man, it was just too much. You know, the foundation issues, we just didn't want to undertake it. You know, we got bids, it was, you know, $100,000 for new foundation. So we walked away. By the way, we're buying a house over here. Can we book an inspection with you on that one? So that's usually when we find out. Realtors don't ever, or hardly ever, come back to me and say, hey, you know, this killed and it was your fault. That's never happened. I've never come into a transaction where a realtor was upset with us for us doing our job, which is one of the things that I really love. The realtors that we work with are very ethical, very responsible. So they're not, they're not upset when things don't go well. They know, just like we know, hey, it's fate. You know, it's fate that brought them there, and that the right thing will come along. And that wasn't the right house for the client. And if you wanted to push that on them, that's sorry for that. That's not right, but they'll get what they need. So we're very blessed with the clients that we've worked with, and everybody is generally always very happy in the end.
Good. To that point, the instances where home inspectors identify and explain what the problems with the house are, there's a way that it can be done that is, exaggerating or over-dramatizing those things. And that's been one of the key differences. I want my clients to have the full protection of the professional home inspection, but I don't want the home inspector to, in his or her report, effectively pound on their chest and say, look how knowledgeable I am. Look at all these things that I found wrong, and scare the client out of buying a house when the only thing on the report is, yeah, there's some dry rot on the south wall and you'll need to replace some of that siding and a couple of door jams here and there. And the way that that's presented can be horrific when it's really not that big of a deal. So I appreciate how you guys do your job very well, but yet deliver the information in such a way that makes it, you know, not insurmountable to the buyer or to the buyer and seller to negotiate a reparation of what you find to keep the deal alive. So, because it's not just the deal, it's the buyers really love that house, And they're not going to buy it if it's catastrophic. And if it's presented as catastrophic, then they just lost out on a house that they like when really it was a few thousand dollars in repairs. So,
yeah.
That's my soapbox for pillar to post.
Yeah, I understand that fully, and I think that that as a home inspector, we do realize that it is their dream. I mean, Melissa and I, when we bought our house, it was our dream. You know, it was everything we wanted, and I'm telling you, it was bad. I mean, it was in bad shape. We knew that kind of going into it. We didn't know how bad it was. We definitely didn't get a very good home inspection at the time.
Oh, this is before you were home inspectors.
Before we were home inspectors, yes.
So. Yeah, I don't even remember the home inspector or the report. I don't even know if I saw it. That's how bad it was.
And then all of the work that came after that. But no, we know it's a dream, and it's the client's dream. And what we also know and what it's taken us time to really learn and really understand is there is absolutely nothing in this world that can't be fixed.
Right.
Everything can be fixed.
Right.
There's generally a price tag associated with it. And yeah, there's knowledge associated with that. But I've never come across something in a house and been like, oh, my God, I don't think this. I've never not had the answer. It's like,
right.
This can be fixed. You know, you just need to contact either this person, or you need this industry, or you need that industry. So there's always a solution. And as the home inspector, giving you that knowledge, giving you that information, giving that knowledge to the realtor, gives them the opportunity to take that back to the table, get some credits, get some finances back towards the purchase, or maybe even back towards the repairs. So it really is a win-win situation. So
right.
we're saving people money, and I love that about our job is we're protecting them. We're saving you money. I know it's a price tag to pay for a home inspection, but yeah, we're there to protect you.
Well, it's really insurance, and we're going to be talking to Bernie later, and that's insurance as well in the traditional sense, but really that home inspection is insurance for them. So we've just got a couple of minutes left, and I'm wanting to know what's maybe a common misconception about getting a home inspection. And Melissa's going to take this one.
Yeah, the misconception about home inspectors in general is that they think that we're specialists in everything, or that we're kind of the know-all of everything. They want us to double-check other people's work, and really, that's not exactly what we're there for. We're there to overlook a good general array of problems and components of the house. But, you know, like Dustin will say, you know, during many of his briefings, we're general practitioners of the house. Anytime you have a problem, we're going to refer you to a specialist of that field. So while we know a great vast knowledge about different things, we're not going to be the expert in everything.
And to that point, when you discover something wrong with the home, you don't offer to fix it for a fee, because that would be a conflict of interest.
Correct.
And so that's important.
Yeah,
we don't
give bids or estimates. Yeah, and you don't want us to either, because, you know, that's just for ethical purposes. We don't want to point out something and then try and get you to get us to fix it. So we remain neutral in that process.
Right. That's great. What are the things about your business that nobody knows, or few people might know, that secret stuff that, you know, every profession has that behind the scenes kind of thing? Something come to mind for you on those?
That nobody knows
too
about
many
our
things
business?
I mean,
just kind of going back to the basic stuff, we always print on site. A lot of people still don't know that. We print right on site. The client will get the binder. They get everything and knowledge right up front.
And we're talking binder. Like, this is a very extensive report that you deliver.
This is pretty extensive, yes.
Like 50 pages or more, right?
Depending on the house. I mean, in good condition, so you can get to the low 20s, even the teens in the pages. Most of that stuff
that
is just going to be...
That brand new house with an outlet, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of that stuff is just going to be general... checking off certain things, like whether you have it or don't have it, not necessarily defects. But it is pretty extensive. The binder comes with a lot more supplemental information than what you'd probably expect to see in a home inspection. So that's always good information for the buyer. I guess most people probably don't know that we use all the technology that we can during a home inspection. It's not just pen and paper. We've got our iPads, We use infrared technology.
It's not pen and paper.
It's not pen and paper. We use infrared technology to detect for overheating, for electrical moisture between the walls, stuff that you can't see through with the naked eye, which is really good information for catching things that might not necessarily be caught early. And then we also have drone equipment for things that we can't see up high, can't walk on clay tile roofs, things like that.
Very, very interesting. We're talking to Dustin Deedy and Melissa Deedy. They are the co-owners of Pillar to Post. How does someone get in touch with you?
You can call our business line,
707-202.
Oh, look at that. How cute.
202-8332. Okay. Or you can get in touch with us via online as well at pillartopost.com, the ddteam.pillartopost.com.
So they have, because Pillar to Post is a national franchise.
Yeah, you can search on the web and put in your zip code, and it should point right to us.
Okay, easy stuff. Great. Thank you guys very much for being here, and thank you for the professionalism that you deliver to the Napa Valley.
Thank
you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Lee.
All right, we're going to be right back after this.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
So, we're continuing on. We have my quasi-co-host, my buddy. Man, I don't know if you went out to the Safeway Open, Bernie, but that was I go every year, but I'm just amazed at the quality and the caliber of golf. And then, of course, getting to hear Bad Company Friday night last week was a lot of fun, too. Which day did you go out?
I went out on Friday night, but I volunteered with Sunrise Rotary.
Okay.
So I did not get to see Bad Company. I heard a lot of good things about the show that, you know, Safeway Open put on.
Right.
And I'm a little jealous I didn't get to see the performance.
Well, there's always next year, and I so look forward to the concerts and the quality of the golf every single year. So, Bernie, we've got a number of topics we're going to be talking about. And folks, the reason that I always want Bernie as my co-host is because he is passionate about being part of the leadership of this community, as am I, and he's very well informed, and he knows what's going on, and he's a member of the GPAC committee, which is looking to plan what our community is going to be like over the next 20, 30, 40 years, and so he's got some topics that he wants to talk about, and we're just going to kind of break into normal conversation here. So take it away.
Thank you, Lee. You know, last night, City Council had a update on our housing conditions for the city of Napa. And there was a lot of data there that, you know, I think we're all aware, most of us are aware that it's expensive to live in Napa, that there is some challenges for some people that live in Napa. I just want to share some information that they presented last night regarding rents in Napa. So the rental market, not if you're a buyer. So the median asking rent is $2,439 a month.
$2,400?
Yes, that's the median asking rent.
Okay.
And the income needed to afford that median asking rent is you have to make $46.90 an hour, $8,130 a month to be able to afford that rent.
How much a month?
$8,100.
Wow.
So that, well, you have to take into account the cost of living for everything else.
Sure.
Yeah, they didn't really say if it's. It didn't say if it was household. I'm assuming it's household, not just individual. They're both making that.
Okay, yeah, because
right.
46 an hour doesn't equate to $8,400.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, so household income.
Right, so really, you both parents are working.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not like...
when I was a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and here a little bit more data. State minimum wage is 12. Waiters and waitress, you know, the average is 12.14 an hour. Retail salespeople, 14.93 an hour. Farm workers and laborers, 15.47 an hour. Teachers, assistants, 15.87 an hour. Teachers and instructors, 24.26 an hour. So people will need to make four times the state minimum wage to afford the current median asking rent. And the
vacancy, and that's not even including or thinking about owning a home.
Right.
That's just to rent here. The median rent price, $2,400.
And the current vacancy rate, according to CNAPA, is 2.3%.
That's actually better than it was a few years ago.
1%.
Yeah, 1% vacancy. And a healthy vacancy rate in any community typically is a 4 to 5% vacancy rate. And so, yeah, we've been at 1%, but if we're at 2% now, that's at least a little bit better. But, you know, all things are relative, obviously. So
right, and not to sound so bleak with the rental, to sound so bleak with the rental market, they are constructing more. They have allowed more permits. There's a lot more housing in the pipeline, so it's going to get a little bit better.
Right.
So it's on the right track. We're looks back because we're not there yet, but you know they're headed there.
To your knowledge, Bernie, the apartments on the east side of the river along in the Gasser area that are just now completed, are some of those set aside for affordable housing, or are those just all market rate?
So there's a section, I believe it's 50, maybe a little bit up.
50 units are there?
They're affordable. Low to very low, and then there's market rate on the other side.
Right, and you know you see things on Nextdoor, and I don't know. Sometimes I get fed up with Nextdoor because we're a community and we should be supporting one another. And it seems like so much of the posts on Nextdoor are just whining and complaining. And yeah, I get that we need to, you know, get involvement, and sometimes it has to be delivered in a negative manner. But when people are posting on Nextdoor negative comments that are erroneous, then, you know, I knew that some of them were affordable housing. I kind of posed the question as if I didn't, but there are people that think that those are luxury apartments and that there is no consideration given to affordable housing. And so, because of you being on here, now we've corrected that. And hopefully they're listening and they now know that there are at least 50 units over there that are reserved.
Right.
And that's part of the developer's requirement. The city says, yes, Mr. Developer, you can come in and you can build here, but you have to, you know, set aside some of these homes for affordable rent. So,
right. One last thing is, what is our goal for Napa to build to get to the amount of housing that requires? Let me rephrase that. You know, the goal that Napa set of what's missing in housing stock is about 3,000 units.
That's so how short we are.
That's the shortfall, right?
Okay.
So 3,000 units and
just of affordable housing, not total housing.
So the number. Good question. That's a good question. You know what? I have in my notes here. This is why I brought it here. Affordable homes.
Affordable
rental homes. Affordable rental
kidding.
Homes.
3,000 just on affordable? I can't even imagine 3,000 more homes, regardless if they're market rate or affordable, in our community. So that's just mind-boggling.
Exactly.
How are we going to achieve that?
Well, that's what we're doing on the GPAC. We're looking at, you know, the current issues that we're facing, where we want to be in 20 years, and how do we get there? How do we encourage policies that are going to support the challenges that we're facing? And there are these, you know, objectives that we want to fulfill.
Right.
And how much of that do we want to fulfill?
Right.
So, you know, 3,000 is a big number.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for a community if we were able to add 3,000 units to our community?
I probably should know this since I'm not a full-time radio talk show host. I'm a realtor. I don't know how many total homes there are in the city limits.
I can tell you that in just a minute.
Of Napa.
We have 30,296 total housing units. 9.4% are affordable.
Okay. And how does that 9.4% compare to, you know, most communities?
I don't have that. I will find that out for next time.
As soon as I asked the question, the answer popped into my head. I bet you most communities do not have affordable housing, because they're not a super high cost of living as Napa. I mean, you go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. My cousin lives in Oklahoma. She just moved to Wisconsin. Anyway, two areas that probably don't require affordable housing set aside as a developer's requirement, because you can buy a house in Tulsa for, $80,000. So
right. So the market there, it's really already meeting the demand of the workers there. I mean, the other part of the report was moderate pricing in housing versus market rate. Market rate is above moderate. So low to very low, you get, assistance. Moderate housing falls right above assistance and right below market housing. So they've only built a couple units that meet moderate income. So that's a shortfall we're facing right now,
right,
is that silent middle, or that middle, that it's really become a challenge. So I don't have the data of how we're comparing to other cities in front of me, but I know of people that are leaving town because it's too expensive to live here.
Right.
People with school-age children, by the way.
Right, which is why we're looking at closing schools and things of that nature. And for those who say, hey, let the chips fall where they may, they can't afford to live here, they can move, and we don't care. That's A, mean, but right, B, yeah, from an economic standpoint, even if they don't move, the fact that they're not living here now and they're commuting in from American Canyon, from Vacaville, Fairfield, Vallejo, they're taking dollars out of our community. They're earning the money here and they're spending it elsewhere. And that's just not a good economic model for any community.
It's not. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a point I often make. And to people that say that, I understand we're not going to be able to house everybody that works here. It's not going to happen. But we can do better, and we can definitely help our local business community by the workers living here so they can spend the money here.
Right.
That is a great point.
Well, and not only does it have that economic benefit of keeping that money here to support local businesses, because that's what this show is all about, but it just makes for a better community overall to have everyone happy where they live and be able to be involved in various activities, whether they be charitable or entertainment or whatever. That's part of the American dream, is to have that sense of community.
Exactly. You want to be invested in your community.
Right.
You live here and you're a little bit more invested than
right
having to drive here.
And be a destination. If you are commuting and you're never really part of our community, then you don't know what's going on, and frankly, you wouldn't care. So,
right.
What else you got, Bernie?
Well, I wanted to mention something about what you said with Nextdoor. And I watch it once, I read it once in a while and go through the comments, and there's a lot of venting. I tell people, there's different ways to get involved. Not everybody can make it to city council meeting, but the information's online, the City of Napa website. You can look at minutes, you can look at the agenda, you can look at the register, and kind of, if you want to get more information, reach out to the local elected and ask them for clarification. Why did you decide to do a roundabout? Why did you, why are you building a certain type of development here? Ask them the questions, get involved. Venting is good, but also getting the information so your vent is accurate.
Exactly. And that's when Scott Sedgley and I had lunch, because he was the third person to email me. I asked him, why did you vote no on Napa Oaks? Why were you in favor of Measure C? And, we
you went right to it, huh?
We differed. That was later in the conversation. We built up to that.
Okay, good.
But you know, we were on opposite sides of those things, and we had a really nice lunch. We grew our friendship, and we were respectful of one another, and that's what I think lacks a lot on online forums, because people think that they can just be as mean and nasty as they want, and that's just not the right way to be. So,
right, you take the personal touch out of it, and then now you're a keyboard warrior.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you know, anything you say, that it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, and they don't. Those keyboard warriors don't realize that they're turning more people off, and so there's fewer and fewer people reading any of those forums simply because the nature of their rants just says to everybody else, "All right, I'm done with this. I'm not going to be on this forum anymore." So.
Right. If you complain, maybe you can help be part of the solution.
Exactly.
There's ample opportunity to do that.
Right. All right. What else we got?
Well, it's not necessarily Napa Valley, but, you know, I went to see the last Giants game.
Oh, I know.
And it was such a great farewell to Skipper, to Bochy.
Right.
You know, you had players from the 2010 World Series, 2012, 2014, you know, come out after the game. You know, they brought the trophies out.
Oh, nice.
You know.
So after the game, they all came and milled around the field. And
The post game seemed longer than the game. I mean, the game was not even.
And they let all the fans down onto the field?
No, they didn't do that.
No, you
know? No, but there was a standing ovation for quite some time. It was still full. You know, very little people left. You know, usually, you know, Giants lost badly, but and usually people leave.
Right.
By the top of ninth or eighth, you know, right. With that score, people are gone.
Right.
But we all stayed because we knew that we were going to say bye to Bochy.
Right.
And it was a great, great ceremony.
That's
I got
that's
a lot of pictures,
really cool.
So if you follow me on social media.
I saw the pictures.
It was great.
So where can people follow you on social media?
So I am on Facebook. Instagram is NapaBernie707. Facebook is Bernie Narvaez. I don't tweet as much. I follow it a little bit, but it's just never been my thing, really.
Right.
So Instagram is really where I'm at the most with my stories. My stories, I share more of my family, my time with my girls. I got two little girls at home, amazing partner in life. So I share that more in the storyline than on the feeds.
Right, right.
So that's where you can find out more about me.
Yeah, and as our listeners know, you are a key sponsor of our show, and you offer all types of insurance services. You've been doing that for a number of years now,
yes.
And especially with your dad having started the business, 20 years ago?
Well, he got involved in the industry long in the 90s.
Okay.
And he was working for another company that got bought out by a Southern California company, and the transition did not go well, so that was an opportunity for us to talk and say, "Hey, let's start our own thing, let's do our way. We know our community better than the corporate company that bought,
right.
You know." So let's do it better, and we've been doing it since we opened in 2008. We started inside a discount store in front of La Morenita Market. It was literally we subleased a closet and turned it into office, and we barely had room for two desks.
So,
but that's how we got started, and
not even the garage startup type of thing.
No, it wasn't a garage; it was a closet startup.
Closet startup, yeah.
Yeah, there's a picture where we barely. I mean, mine was a mini desk. My dad almost had a regular desk, but we made it work, and we still work together to this day. And for me, it's been a real joy to work with my dad.
Yeah, and help so many members of our community.
Well, that's the thing: is insurance can be intimidating, it can be overwhelming for people. Some people get it, some people don't. So we always start with, and I want to understand your level of comprehension with insurance, right? So if there's a misunderstanding in something, it gives an opportunity to educate a little bit and making sure they understand before they leave. Whether you get insurance with me or not, when you leave, I'm hoping you have a better understanding,
right,
of how insurance is, you know, relevant to your situation, because everybody's situation is different. You know, somebody that's just at college has one car, old car, right? Versus somebody that has business assets, you know, has children.
Liability.
It's different.
Right.
You know, your assets, your liability exposure is different. so the conversation is different. So before they leave, I make sure they know what questions to ask whoever else they talk to in the insurance industry.
Right. And because you're an independent broker, you can recommend a multitude of carriers, not just the one that is on the door.
Right. So I get to choose who we work with. We're an agent broker. So some of the riskier businesses, some unique businesses, we broker out. If somebody has, you know, claims or, you know, it's a new venture or certain businesses that are very unique, then we broker it out. And with other ones, we were an agent. And really the difference is one is binding. I can cover you right there on the spot. The other one is is a different process to get to the policy coverage point. So really that's an internal thing. Really what means to you is that we have options to provide you what you need. We have that flexibility.
That are going to be custom made because, like you say, the business owner that's got five cars and equipment vehicles and for the business is going to be completely different than the student who's driving a beater that maybe doesn't even want collision coverage on a $1,000 vehicle with a $500 deductible or something.
That was me at 18, man.
Y'all totally. That
Ford
was me
Maverick.
Too.
You know, I didn't need
you had the Maverick?
I had a Maverick.
I had a 64 Dodge Dart with a push-button transmission that my mother had, then my older sister had, then my other sister had. Each one of the three of them got into little fender benders. And slowly but surely, the car was just deteriorating. And they go, okay, Lee, you can drive this car now. Hey, thanks a lot.
Actually, I finally purchased a brand new car for the first time in my life a couple weeks ago. It's always been used cars. It's always been just because I couldn't ever justify getting a new car knowing the business I'm in. You know. But finally, I was like, okay, you know, I think it's time to do it. I think I waited long enough.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, it's always been beaters and...
Right. I don't know. I still have a tough time buying a new car because I want somebody else to take that first depreciation hit. And, you know, but I don't drive very much. So, you know, leasing was working for me for a while. Yeah. But
for me, see, our situation is different. I have a growing family. I have two little girls.
Right.
And I'm a homeowner now for 2 years. So, you know, it's a truck and the space in the back. Now it's safer. I had smaller compact vehicle. Can fit my family comfortably. So situations change. And that's why my business, as your situation changes, we have the you know products in place to adjust as that changes.
Right. And the DMV services that you offer.
Yeah, the DMV services. We've
nobody
been doing
loves
for a long time.
Hanging out at the DMV.
Well, you can wait. You know, if you wait, it's usually 5 minutes. Maybe 10 minutes, but we have TV, we have snacks, we have coffee.
You're not talking about it at the DMV.
No, you're talking about my place.
In your office.
Yeah, you walk out with, you know, with the tags or if you need duplicate plates, if your registration is suspended, you know, there's a very daunting process for people that haven't done it, but we can do all there. We can remove the suspension. We can make sure you pay the fee online when we get your tags. You can leave there insured and registered and never have to go to the DMV.
That reminds me, I got to talk to you about something, but I don't know if I should do it off the air or not, but our lease is coming due and we're way under on miles. It makes sense to purchase the vehicle if for no other reason than to resell it, but they want to charge me sales tax. And then if I sell it to somebody else, then they're going to pay sales tax and Uncle Sam's double dipping. So if you got a way around, you know, legally, of course, that I don't have to have the sales tax paid twice, that would be great.
You know, what we can do is...
Maybe somebody else is in the same situation and they're glad we're talking about it.
Right. So if you decide, you know, if you have a few different avenues that you can take here, then we can look at different scenarios and see which scenario best fits what you want.
Right.
You know, because we have a system, we put in the info, say, if you sold it this way or if you bought it this way, that's how much it would be. But if you buy this vehicle or you sell to this person for whatever, that's how much it's going to be.
Okay.
So, you know, we just want to make sure when it's correct, we make sure the process is, you know, we're licensed, bonded, insured, you know, in authorized by the state to do this. So we want to make sure everything's accurate.
Great.
The paperwork matches.
Right.
So
of course.
we can do different scenarios. Say, what if I buy this vehicle or that vehicle, and then we can tell you how much it's going to be.
Right. Well, you're talking about how much the insurance is going to be.
That too, and the registration, because okay. you do pay taxes on if you buy a vehicle on the amount of the,
right.
the purchase, not necessarily the value of the vehicle, but the amount of the purchase.
And that's where buying a beater was no big deal.
Yeah.
You spent $700 on a car back in the day, and you know the tax thing wasn't that big. But you know now I'm looking at $1,500 just in sales tax, and it's just you know for a car that I'm going to turn around and sell 2 days later. Just doesn't seem to make sense. So, all right, we are getting close to the top of the hour. Talk about, and I saw this in the paper too. The Napa PD doing bar hops with the breathalyzers. So.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, I like what that then you know our police department's kind of going out to community and explaining the importance of you know not driving drunk.
Right.
And, you know, maybe everybody has a different measure of, no, I can drive or no, I'm drunk or no, I'm good with one beer. So what they've done is they visit the bars and give breathalyzer tests and educate people. And it seems more of a fun way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, instead of waiting till you're pulled over and then they do it.
Yeah.
No, you know, let's do it at the bar.
It's not, right? not what anybody wants. But I think it's really cool because it involves them in the community and it builds the community relations. But it's also this aha moment that people have. They sit there and think, oh, I'm totally okay to drive. And then, okay, well, let you know, go ahead and blow in the breathalyzer. And you're like, oh, I'm 0.08? I didn't have any idea that I was that. So, and I think you know, or maybe you don't, that I carry a breathalyzer with me all the time. And I know that it kind of registers a little on the high side, but I still just abide by it all the time. But what's interesting about it is it's very much a safety device. And no, it's not connected to my ignition or anything of that nature. It's not court mandated. But it also becomes somewhat of a party tool or party toy if we're out and about. So,
well, we live in Napa. Wine is readily available, and it's something that we can be mindful of before we drive. And with Uber, Lyft, and this rideshare, you know, being so accessible.
Yeah.
You know, I've left my vehicle downtown several times and just Ubered home.
And I can walk home, so.
Yeah. So it's make better choices out there.
Great. All right. Well, that wraps up another edition of All Things Napa. Remember, live your life as if your legacy matters, because it does. See you next week, folks.
Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renters insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance.